was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.
This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Officials with the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden say Russian warships are headed to the Caribbean for naval drills as tensions rise over Ukraine. Here's AP correspondent Ben Thomas with details.
The ships may also make port calls in Venezuela and Cuba as Russia establishes a Western Hemisphere military presence. The officials call it notable but not concerning. It's not the first time Russia has sent its ships to the Caribbean, but it's taking place as President Vladimir Putin has said Moscow could take asymmetrical steps in response to President Biden's decision to allow Ukraine to use U.S.-provided weapons to strike inside Russia to defend Kharkiv. At a news conference Wednesday, Putin warned Russia could provide long-range weapons to enable others to strike Western targets. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Some U.S. World War II veterans made a pilgrimage to France and received a hero's welcome before Thursday's 80th anniversary of D-Day. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has more on the observance of the June 6, 1944 invasion of France, the largest seaborne invasion in world history.
In Colleville-sur-Mer, people cheered as veterans in their 90s and 100s were pushed in wheelchairs down the street.
Oh, everything is fine today for a 98-year-old.
Charlie Brookings, one of a dwindling number who fought in the war.
Thank you, sir. You're very well.
Some signed autographs. As those who lined the street not far from Normandy's revered shoreline gave their thanks to Ray Falk and other vets.
It was overwhelming.
The message from some veterans, don't forget what we did. America and its allies paid a giant price to keep the world free. I'm Sagar Megan.
Follow us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at voanews.com. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu toured the country's northern border with Lebanon on Wednesday and said Israel was prepared for strong action in the north. Israeli towns near the border, many of which have been evacuated, have been a frequent target of rocket and drone launches from Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. The rockets set off massive wildfires this week, burning large areas of land across northern Israel. Iran-backed Hezbollah and Israel have been exchanging fire for the past 8 months in parallel with the Gaza war, raising concerns that an even wider conflict could break out between the heavily armed adversaries. The jury in the gun trial of Hunter Biden heard testimony Wednesday from his ex-wife and a former girlfriend about finding his illicit drug paraphernalia. AP correspondent Ed Donahue has details.
Kathleen Buell was married to President Biden's son for 20 years. She testified she discovered her husband was using drugs when she found a crack pipe in an ashtray on the porch of their home in 2015. When confronted, he admitted smoking crack. Buell says she never saw Hunter Biden use drugs. Prosecutors also called Zoe Keston. She met Biden in 2017. She told jurors when she saw him use drugs, buy drugs, talk about drugs, or possess drug paraphernalia. Keston acknowledged she had no contact with Hunter Biden during the period when he bought a gun in 2018. The trial is about whether he lied on a gun purchase form when he said he wasn't using drugs. I'm Ed Donahue.
A not-so-subtle warning on Wednesday from U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres as climate records are shattered and emissions continue to rise. VOA's Lori London reports.
On World Environment Day, the UN chief urged countries to confront not just the fossil fuel industry, but also companies that support efforts to obstruct progress and sow doubt about climate change.
I call on these companies to stop acting as enablers of planetary destruction. Stop taking on new fossil fuel clients from today and set out plans to drop your existing ones.
The EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service Wednesday reported that last month was the hottest May ever, marking the 12th straight monthly record high. Lori London, VOA News, Washington.
Brazil's environmental minister said Wednesday after historic flooding in Brazil, the country expects a swing to severe drought. Brazil has been battered by a series of extreme weather events, most recently once-in-a-century flooding in the state of Rio Grande do Sul that left 172 people dead. The minister said the flooding was due to a mashup of natural phenomena such as El Nino and climate change. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, and download our VOA News app. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 6th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Chad and other Sahel states receive Russia's foreign and defense ministers.
Several hundred people gathered at the N'Djamena International Airport Wednesday to welcome Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov.
South Sudan's parliament is divided over a move to question five ministers. The evolving face of Johannesburg's Chinatown and South Africa's Chinese citizens. The race for the next chairperson of the African Union Commission is taking shape.
It's a very important seat because, number one, it raises the profile of a country in terms of its diplomatic clout on the African continent and even continentally and internationally.
And former President Donald Trump is looking to overturn, on appeal, felony convictions against him. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov was expected in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, on Wednesday, continuing an African tour that has taken him to Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Congo-Brazzaville. The visits are seen by civil society and analysts as Russia's attempt to establish its troops in the Sahel region after military leaders seized power there. Their coups sparked ideological differences over the presence of American and French troops in Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Niger, and Chad. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Several hundred people gathered at the N'Djamena International Airport Wednesday to welcome Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Chad's government says it mobilized civilians to receive Lavrov because he is the first top foreign official to visit after the inauguration of Mohamed Idriss Déby as Chad's president and the formation of a new government to end a three-year transition in the Central African state. Among those awaiting the Russian envoy is 38-year-old merchant Immaculate Jada. Jada says she expects Russia, one of the leading producers and exporters of wheat, to transfer technology and know-how to Chad, where civilians have enough land to produce wheat, rice, maize and beef, but do not have enough food to eat. In a statement released Wednesday, Chad's government said Lavrov will discuss efficient methods to combat terrorism and enhance military, diplomatic, economic and trade ties between Chad and Russia. The government said Lavrov will also discuss the security situation in the countries of the Sahel as well as the war in Sudan, which has displaced close to a million people across Sudan's border to Chad and Libya. Lavrov is visiting Chad at a time when Russia is expanding its military presence in Sahel countries, including Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, Sudan, and Chad. At the same time, Sahel countries are asking troops of their former colonial ruler, France, to leave. Niger's military rulers said in May of this year, high-level talks were held with U.S. military officials in Niamey to coordinate plans to also withdraw more than 900 American military forces before the end of 2024. Chad says most U.S. troops left its territory before the Central African state's May 6 presidential elections. U.S. troops have been stationed in Chad and Niger to help local militias combat Islamist terrorists in Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, Mauritania, Sudan, and Chad. Yamingi Betinbaye is a political analyst at Chad's Anthropology and Human Sciences Research Center. He spoke on Chad's state TV Wednesday. Betinbaye says Russia has been successfully reinforcing its military presence in countries of the Sahel region since 2021, when the Mali army, led by Colonel Assimi Goïta, seized power from President Ban Dao. He says Niger, Chad, Burkina Faso and Mali, that have military rulers, are suspending military cooperation with France because Paris never succeeded in pushing back jihadist threats even with the one-time presence of 5,500 stationed French troops in the region. France has always said it is present in Africa to promote democracy, human rights, economic growth, and fight increasing insecurity. Russia started deploying military equipment and trainers to Sahel countries when military leaders who seized power began forcing out French troops. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
African Union AU Commission chairperson election will be held in February 2025 to choose a successor to incumbent chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat. Past chairpersons have hailed from western, central, and southern regions of Africa. Now, some analysts say it is time for the East and North African regions to produce the next chairperson and deputy chairperson. For more on the significance of the role of the AU Commission chairperson, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Edgar Gitua, an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi.
It's a very important seat because, number one, it raises the profile of a country in terms of its diplomatic clout on the African continent and even continentally and then internationally. So it's a very important seat because even though the individual in that office serves the entire African continent, there is that prestige and pride that a country has that it is one of our own who is heading the commission. So it is important in that sense from the optic perspective. And also from the AU chair being able to, depending on the agenda of the commission, the country's agenda can easily be dealt with or can be advanced very easily.
This is East Africa's time to provide the African Union Commission chairperson. What, in your view, is your take on the current leaders being considered?
So far, we have the lady from Somalia. She's an experienced diplomat. Then we have also the former foreign affairs minister from Djibouti. He's multilingual, very experienced. We have our own Kenya's Raila also going for that seat. Of course, he has the networks, he has the experience. We have strong candidates this time around, and that's why it needs to be managed very carefully, because each of them is very strong. And I feel the dynamics are going to be basically, in my view, between the two final candidates will be between Djibouti and Kenya. And when Djibouti and Kenya are vying for this, we will have the Anglophones versus the Francophone narrative coming up again. Because Djibouti, the Francophones will support the Djibouti candidate. The Anglophones might support Raila because now Kenya and the Commonwealth have just been an Anglophone country.
Some analysts have said that despite being the main administrative organ of the AU, the Commission lacks the tools, the legal and political power to do its work. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you're right, by the way, because the summit of the AU, that is where those are the real power brokers. Those are the ones who influence policy on the African continent. The AU Commission is like the secretariat. These are the spanner boys of trying to effect whatever the summit decides. So the politics and the big decisions, regardless of how good plans or what good plans the Commission might come up with, it is still the summit that needs to ratify and agree. If those presidents do not want to lend you the support, they will frustrate whatever agenda the Commission has. To an extent, it is weak, but depending on the candidate who is chosen, if that candidate is influential, he can be able to talk to the summit. He can be able to talk to the president and convince them. He can be able to lobby and get support for whatever agenda it is the Commission wants to have, and also to just convince the summit, the heads of state, that some causes are worthy to follow and to support. I'm just hoping that East Africa will get its act together. Number one, Kenya, I think, in my view, should start talking to Djibouti or to Somalia, the candidates to step down and back them on something else or support them on something else that they might want so they can get behind our agenda. Otherwise, if the Djibouti candidate and Raila face off, we will have an issue of splitting of votes in terms of the Anglophone versus Francophones. And I don't know now, when it gets to that level, you don't know what the chances are.
Edgar Gitua is an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with viewers Douglas Mpuga. Some lawmakers in South Sudan's transitional assembly say the assembly leadership is dragging its feet on urgent humanitarian matters. On Tuesday this week, a sitting aimed at questioning five ministers was adjourned because some ministers were absent. For VOA News, Mayang David Maya reports from Juba.
South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly was thrown into disarray on Tuesday when its Speaker Gemma Nunu-Kumba announced the adjournment of the sitting because some of the summoned ministers had not appeared. The members of parliament became divided as some wanted the discussion to continue. Chanding Maror, who represents Northern Bahr El Ghazal State under the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition party, is one of the MPs who wanted the sitting to proceed. He accuses the assembly's leadership of dragging its feet on national concerns, including the worsening food security situation.
If not delay, then whoever come to the house should answer accordingly, because the ministers are ministers, but any minister have his own ministry. The minister concerned or the minister on place have to answer, have to tell us his own proposal, like what Minister of Humanitarian Affairs have done. Well, there will be nowhere of protecting the ministers.
On Tuesday, the Transitional National Legislative Assembly summoned the ministers of Agriculture, Trade, Finance, Petroleum and Humanitarian Affairs to appear before lawmakers to answer questions on the looming hunger in the country. Two of the five ministers failed to show up, leading Speaker Gemma Nunu-Kumba to adjourn the sitting.
You know, these three ministries are related: Agriculture, Trade, Petroleum and Finance. The majority of them are not here, only one. Therefore, we will be wasting time, and again, we will call them again. That's why we should just adjourn the sitting.
Nunu says the two absent ministers were out of the country on an official mission. Albino Mayuenbol, another SPLMIO lawmaker, says the speaker was acting out of fear that President Salva Kiir will stop supporting them.
She always fear because, you know, the kind of revoking become a big issue here in parliament. Anyone in SPLMIG, they're not willing to tell the truth while they know the truth. Because of revoking, they are fear maybe President can revoking them. She should put the interest of the people above. Because, you know, nation is above all of us, we are a nation is above us.
Mawian and Ding say South Sudanese in the countryside are dying in silence, and parliament needs to urgently question the ministers about their plans to help them. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, says 9 million people, 72% of South Sudan's population, will require humanitarian assistance this year. More than 7 million people are expected to experience severe food insecurity by July. Lino Hutu, an SPLM lawmaker, says the Transitional Legislative Assembly is committed to holding the executive accountable for addressing the humanitarian situation in the country.
The parliament has been doing very, 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 very well, including our right honorable speaker. You see, this parliament, although it is an appointment, it is an appointed parliament, it is doing very well. You know, the parliament has been standing very, 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 very strong to resolve those simmering issues as far as the lives of our people are concerned.
Hutu says South Sudan should focus on agriculture to solve the worsening economic situation in the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 6th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC, said Wednesday it had reached out to rivals to form a government of national unity. This after failing to win an outright majority in last week's general election. An ANC spokeswoman, Madlengi Bingu Munseri, told reporters that the party had held explorative talks with several others as it tries to secure enough parliamentary support to form a government and elect a president. The French news agency AFP quoted Bengu Munseri as saying that the ANC's decision-making body was to meet today, Thursday, to vet out options, including trying to form a minority government. South Africa has seen several waves of immigration from China, with early generations of migrants fleeing extreme poverty at home and more arrivals seeking business opportunities. Kate Butler has the story about Chinese South Africans who have established businesses in Johannesburg's old and new Chinatowns.
From duck to dim sum, the kitchen inside Shonde restaurant in Johannesburg gives Chinese immigrants a little taste of home.
Hong Kong native and restaurant owner Kun Chan immigrated to South Africa almost 40 years ago.
It was easy to make money in South Africa back then.
Chan used to have a restaurant in the old original Chinatown. He closed that business because people got scared going to the old Chinatown due to crime.
Chinese migrants have been living in Johannesburg before the old Chinatown was even built.
The first Chinese arrived in the 17th century as convicts or slaves from what is now Indonesia with the Dutch East India Company. Then, during the early 1800s, Chinese indentured laborers were brought to work on the railways. The original Chinatown on Commissioner Street was established in the 1880s when free Chinese from the impoverished south of China came to the frontier mining town as part of the gold rush.
Then, in 1948, South Africa established the apartheid system. Chinese living in the country were classified as colored. Like black South Africans at the time, they were restricted to living in certain areas, but much has changed. Apartheid ended and a democratic government was formed in 1994. How ethnic Chinese immigrants from different backgrounds see each other also changed, says Arthur Ma.
Before, say 20 years ago, you could feel it because we don't even really speak to each other, the new and old one. We just speak to our own selves, the local Chinese and the overseas Chinese. Now, we help one another.
Ma is a first-generation Chinese South African. His father fled poverty in southern China and arrived by boat in 1942. As life improved here, he sent money back home.
Then we actually helped build a hospital, give a little bit of donation in our own village.
Now the Chinese community includes people from Taiwan and Hong Kong. And as China opens up and prospers, there are new immigrants from mainland China.
Anything we need help, we always ask the new one, because they're the ones with the money, you see, because China's going good. But we pave the road for them in this country.
Now there is a new, safer Chinatown where more Chinese gather in the suburb of Cyrildene. South African-born doctor Alice Yulin Fan's parents moved from Taiwan in the 1980s.
My dad and my aunt opened up factories in Bloemfontein, and then afterwards they opened up restaurants. So quite.
Yulin Fan and Chan's children and grandchildren can now live where they choose to live in the city. Many have professional jobs, but still come to the new Chinatown where Chan has relocated his restaurant.
Eating. Celebrating festivals. Events that bring ethnic Chinese from different backgrounds together to keep traditions alive. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A workers' union in Mali has called on employees of banks, insurance companies, microfinance institutions, and petrol stations to stop work from Thursday after the arrest of its secretary general. The National Union of Banks, Insurance Companies, Financial Institutions, and Businesses of Mali said its secretary general, Amadou Ba, was arrested on Wednesday. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump says he will appeal last week's felony convictions for falsifying business records ahead of his 2016 election. VOA correspondent Scott Stern looks at the former president's prospects for appeal and whether those convictions might be overturned before Election Day.
Donald Trump says he was wronged in a New York courtroom last week by a judge who's given him ample grounds for appeal.
So we're going to be appealing this scam. We're going to be appealing it on many different things. He wouldn't allow us to have witnesses. He wouldn't allow us to talk. He wouldn't allow us to do anything. The judge was a tyrant.
Trump was convicted on 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide payments used to illegally influence his 2016 election. Trump says the trial was rigged by backers of President Joe Biden. Biden says Trump's convictions reaffirm that no one is above the law.
Now he'll be given the opportunity, as he should, to appeal that decision just like everyone else has that opportunity. That's how the American system of justice works. And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict.
On appeal, Trump attorneys may start with whether the statute used to prosecute him was overly vague, says Georgetown Law Professor Abby Smith.
The statute itself is so broad or ambiguous that it could cast a net too widely, and people caught up in that net wouldn't know exactly what it was they were facing, wouldn't understand what the law proscribes and what the law allows, given the wording of the statutes.
Smith says Trump's attorneys might then look at whether the trial judge allowed in evidence that he should not have, or prevented evidence from coming in for the defense that he should have allowed.
When we wanted to do things, he wouldn't let us do those things. But when the government wanted something, they got everything. They got everything they wanted.
Trump may also appeal on the grounds of ineffective counsel.
And there, I think, perhaps, defense counsel's failure to object to the testimony by Stormy Daniels suggesting that the sexual encounter between her and Mr. Trump was anything other than consensual might be fertile grounds for an appeal challenging the effectiveness of counsel.
Whatever their strategies, Trump and his attorneys are unlikely to make the appeal before his July 11 sentencing, says John Jay College of Criminal Justice professor David Shapiro.
He will likely await sentencing. That way he has, and his attorneys have, a full perspective on what exposure he faces, rather than doing it piecemeal, which, among other things, burn ups Mr. Trump's financial resources and doesn't really provide a material advantage to his case.
The appeal is unlikely to be ruled on before Election Day, says Smith.
This is not a quick process. I don't see, even if the appellate division regards this case as special and urgent because of the presidential election, I still don't see that happening before November.
If his convictions are not overturned by Election Day, Trump will be the first felon to stand for president on a major U.S. party ticket. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.
This is Larry London, your host of Border Crossings, heard weekdays at 1500 Universal. We normally play requests and dedications, but on Tuesdays, we bring you a special, a music feature, the Spotlight Featured Artist of the Week. And every week, it's a different artist. On a Tuesday, Bella Rios joins us this coming up Tuesday. Tune in at 1500 Universal. This is Border Crossings, and we are on The Voice of America.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Around the clock, The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source.